You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This week, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52, Hobart's leading pop culture emporium. And it is indeed episode 227 on this Thursday, the 30th of September. Now, fellas, I just wanted to mention that I will be buying the new Dungeons & Dragons books that are coming out very soon.
Ooh, yes. Again?
Yeah, I know. It's a thing that I do.
Oh, you can't buy too many books, laddie.
Indeed.
This is the autobiography of Mark's upbringing, is that right?
Yes, give or take, because he's back in fantasy times, because he's getting old and whatnot.
Oh, you guys.
And anyway, the reason I'm interested is because recently I've been reading some of the D&D comics, because have I ever mentioned that I like comic books?
No, really?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
And also, just thought I'd need to bring this up at the start of the show. Cosmic Encounter, right, is a game we all love.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I love the art in that.
Hang on.
You would.
You suckers.
Yeah.
I won that game last time.
Did you win the last one anyway? I just wanted to mention the fact that it's a game that should be played with 5 players and should be played within a maximum of 6 players, I think.
Actually, I think I took a photo and posted that up on Instagram.
Okay.
Was that from BorderCon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was anyway. And also, I just thought I'd mention the fact that I think Founders of Gloomhaven would be absolutely rubbish, even though none of us have actually played it.
Although it does have a really good trashing mechanic.
Okay, I haven't heard that actually, but
yeah, because people are throwing it in the trash.
Yeah, okay, that's really really good.
There've been a few for sale of late. Anyway.
Are you still waiting for that to come from Kickstarter, Leon?
I'm waiting on plenty of things to come from Kickstarter, Mark.
Yeah, you are. But anyway, let's move on a little bit here and talk about what we're actually going to be talking about this week. Does that sound okay? So Leon.
Yes.
What you're going to do
is
explain what's going on this week's show.
Well, I'm going to be talking about a game that's set in India in the era of aspiring Mongol Empire.
Oh, really? Yeah. That sounds like a very good, possibly worker placement, possibly dice manipulation style game.
Possibly.
And I don't think it can be overstated how important it is, the numbers and the pips on those dice. I know it might seem a bit pedantic, but it is incredibly important, the pips that you will find on those dice. Is that right, guys? Is that right?
Yeah.
Exactly. What else have we got? Mark, surely you have something else that you want to talk about.
I'm going to talk about Kickstarter tonight.
All right. Well,
some game that Leon's still waiting on, no doubt.
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. Well, before we get to that, we'll thank Area 52 and we better go to a song, hey?
Mm.
But before we even do that,
bingo! Bingo!
Well, there you go. That was an incredibly exciting song by Badly Drawn Boy. It was Blistered Heart. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Leon.
Hello.
It's your turn.
Yes.
To tell us what we have all been playing this week. Or at least lately.
Yeah, it's a rough term of lately. Anyway,
I was going to say, Leon, before you start, for anyone who didn't know what was going on in the introduction, just check the Facebook page. It will all become very clear.
Yes. I mean, even if you check it, it still could be absolutely nonsense. But it doesn't matter. We've got an hour to kill. What do you expect, people? Anyway, so I'm going to talk about a game that has come out from Hutch Games, or Hutch and Friends, as they're also known. And this is a company known for various different games. Keyflower, Kalis, Trajan, Vinyos, Hive, and Francis Drake, just to name a few.
Francis Drake.
So some absolute perler games in there. And the game we're going to be talking about is designed by Inka and Marcus Brand, who are a German design couple, and since 2006 have done more than 40 joint-developed games, which have, you know, won various prizes and stuff as well.
Did you just say they were a German-designed couple?
I did.
Who designed them?
Germans, I would assume.
Gus, stop being so pedantic.
It's a thing that... Anyway, that's another tick. they've done things like The Village. Recently, they've done games like Word Slam and The Rise of Queensdale. They've also done a game called St. Malo, which I've been told is one of the best roll-and-write games ever made, but is out of print at the moment, which they should probably bring back in print, considering that they're the kind of the flavour of the month at the moment.
Yeah, roll-and-write is everywhere.
Indeed. But
Also, most importantly, they are responsible for what I said was my game of the year last year, which is the Exit series, which is they didn't invent Escape Room in a Box, but they've definitely probably popularized it the most in our little hobby because the Exit series are the best of those type of games in our hobby.
Mm.
But we're not talking about any of them, so that was just a waste of everybody's time when I just did. Like I said, people, we've got an hour.
You're educating people on the history of Inca and Marcus, and yes. I think that is... That's good research, Leon.
I try. Anyway, so what we're talking about is Raja of the Ganges, which is a 2-4 player worker placement and also race game.
Don't forget the dice.
Yes, indeed. There's dice involved, lots of shiny dice. And through tactics and karma to wealth and to fame in 16th century India, the powerful empire of the great Mongol has risen between the Indus and Ganges River. And you take on the role of Rajas and Ranis, whoever they are, which represent the country's influential nobles, and you're trying to gain the favour. So what you're trying to do in this game is there are two tracks. Normally there's a victory point track in most games. This game has two. There is a fame track, which is basically kind of like your victory point track. Basically, that is basically. And there is a wealth track, which is your money you're going to be using back and forth. So that will go fluctuating, but your fame track will, once it goes up, won't go back down. It's not like Paulie Shore. It's not going the other way.
But this immediately is something that is a little bit different about this game because the two tracks are going in completely different directions around the board. One is going clockwise, one is going anti-clockwise.
Yes, and the wealth track goes up to like 200 or so, and the fame track only goes up to like 40, and you think, because the aim of this game, I'm going to bury the lead here, is the winner of this game is the person that's going to get those two tracks to cross.
The first player to cross their streams.
Yes, the first player to cross the streams. We've been told for years not to do it, and now this game comes along and just throws it all completely out of whack. But if the basis of this game is a worker placement game. It is very, very colourful if you see the board. Lots of different stuff going on, but there's only a few different locations you can actually go to. So some of them are, there is the harbour, probably the simplest one of the lot. You go to the harbour, you'll place a worker, you'll place one of the die you have. The dies you use in this game are various different colours. They're used as like your resources type thing. And you'll roll them as soon as you get them, and based off the chits that are on them, that could determine different actions. Some of them you need specific numbers, some of them you don't. You right over there, Mark?
Yeah, sorry. I'm just
give me some warning, I'll turn off your microphone.
Sorry.
It's that polio kicking up again, isn't it? Because you're old.
I thought it was measles.
Oh, yeah. A bit of dengue fever. Is that pronounced dengue? Is that right?
Dengue.
Dengue? What's dengue?
Hey, put me back in.
No.
Anywho.
Professionalism, guys.
So the harbour. Everyone will have a cool little boat that goes up the harbour, which is in the middle of this this board. And every spot you land on will give you something special. It could give you a die, it could give you an extra resource, a bit of extra money, a bit of extra fame, as well as there's extra workers, because there's three, I think, extra workers. No, sorry. You start the game with three workers. You do have access to three others, but you can only take two of them.
Correct.
So there's one that's on the river, there's one that's on the fame track, and I think there's one that's on the wealth track as well. So the first of two of those you get, the other one goes out of the game, and you'll have five workers to spend. So it does actually quite ramp up that in the later games you'll move on a bit quicker because you know what you want to do, but you'll have more workers to do them.
And I must say that this game possibly has a place in my heart purely because I based all my early game decision making on the Mark Rickard School of Worker Placement,
yes. Yep.
Which was doing everything I could to get that first worker out there so I could get more actions during the course of the game.
So there's that. And then the next one, which is the most straightforward, is the palace. There's lots of different areas of the palace, and the palace is good because there's an area you can go to when you've got a worker and nothing else, and you'll get some stuff for free, which is a beautiful thing.
Correct.
There's also several places you can go to where you just simply turn one die into two others. So you can turn one blue into two orange, one purple into two green, and so on and so forth. Then there are six spots on the board where you can put a worker and a die, depending on what chit you have on that die. So from 1 to 6, and they do various different actions. Some of them let you go up the river, like by 6 chits, like a big old streaming up the river.
Which is massive. Yep. But the thing about a river, not many people know this about rivers, is they're only one directional.
Yeah.
So once you start moving up the river, you can't go back.
Yeah.
So the river, it's one of those immediately challenging decisions because you can just steam ahead and get to the end, which will get you an additional worker.
Yeah, I was going to say that, that final way, worker you get from going under the bridge,
yeah,
don't you?
But yeah, along the way, there are those bonuses you talked about that can add up to a hell of a lot of free stuff.
And it's not like those bonuses go away. You just need to land on that tile. And the thing is, if you've got a boat in front of you and you roll, say, one space, you ignore that person in front of you and you move one space in front of them. So you skip ahead.
Yeah.
And if you've got four to, I think, does this go up to five? Maybe just four players at the moment this game goes up to. You can skip ahead heaps of places without even really knowing it. So that is one of the things. And that palace, like I said, you get things like extra dice, extra resources. One of them gives you a worker, the first player marker for the next round, and a couple of fame points. So they're the kind of simpler ones. Then you move on to the quarry and the marketplace. So what the quarry does is it lets you, again, use die to buy these tiles that are out in the game. You're basically having your own little personal game of Carcassonne.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's like, I must admit, I got a bit sidetracked about what was going on the main board because I wanted to do the little Carcassonne thing. But not only is it like Carcassonne, you've also got the roads that go off to the sides of the board and give you extra bonuses as well.
Yeah, so it's not like Carcassonne where you can just build out crazily. You've actually got a certain grid, which is like 12 by 12 grid, and you put on the pieces, as Mark said, and if those roads get to the edges, you get special rewards for them. And if you can, on those pieces that you put onto that board, you'll have various different locations. Some of them will have resource symbols on them. Some of them will have various different temples and buildings and stuff, which when you score them later, you will get victory points for. And when you score the resources later, which is what going to the marketplace does, you will score money. So as I said, two different things you're gaming for in this game. You want the fame, which you get from those buildings. You want the resources, which give you money. So you go up that other track. So always constantly that gauge in this of which track are you going to try and go up.
Yeah, and that's the challenge because it is a hell of a lot easier to get money, but you're also got to spend your money to do stuff a lot of the time. So you're earning it and then you're spending it, whereas fame, it just keeps chugging along.
And the beauty of this that I love is you're not having to invest in an equal amount in them. You can have the two tracks meet in the middle. You can go two-thirds around the money track and meet fame, or you can go two-thirds around the fame track and meet the money. You really have quite a choice in what strategy you want to follow.
Yeah, and another thing about this game as well is that there's various different variants you can play this game with. I actually have them in the rulebook, two or three different ways you can play it by saying, no, you can have up to six workers. And those boards that I said that are like your own little Carcassonne kind of boards, they do flip over to a more complicated side, which adds a few extra resources that you can use in games. But I haven't used them yet because I haven't felt the need to yet, but it's nice to know they're there, as well as some extra tiles that can replace the tiles that are on the river to change them up a bit as well. So they've pretty much kind of like added a mini expansion in the base game which is pretty good. But the thing is, when I played it, I ran up the fame track really quick and I thought, I'm leading here because fame is harder to get than wealth, hence why there's only like 40 spaces on the board for it. So I thought I was kind of in lead. But then the other two people I was playing it with, they were hammering up the wealth track and they ended up sort of eventually catching me up in the fame. But since I'd spent so much time at the start getting my fame up, I hadn't got the money engine going that they did, so I ended up coming dead last from an absolute streaming ahead at the first, which you guys could probably say it's something I do very if you ask most people who's leading a third into the game, Leon's the answer most of the time. But I guess that's the you for today, isn't it?
He
or going
sure
off
is
half-cocked, which is, you know, me in a nutshell.
You damn millennial.
Which
No, that's completely true. But it's one of those things where you'd need to be sort of having one toe in either side of this.
Yep.
And you need to work on your fame when you already got your money going and vice versa. It's one of those games where you theoretically could go all in one and just go nothing but fame, but you're going to have a hard slog. And I'd be very impressed if anyone was actually able to pull out a win having such a lopsided strategy as that.
And Leon, did you mention
no.
the first player marker?
I did not.
The elephant.
Yes, there is a little tiny elephant.
Is a little 3D standy elephant. And who's the lady with all the arms? Is that Shiva?
Shiva's the destroyer. I don't know if she's the one with all the arms.
You've got your cardboard cutout with lots of arms, which is basically just a place for you to put your dice
it's
while you're not using
them. Completely unnecessary.
But
absolutely unnecessary. But geez, it looks good.
Just like the rest of this game, it is Did I mention I like the art? It's absolutely gorgeous, and the colours are
so... Were you blown away by it, Mark?
I don't know, but the colours are so...
It's not on there, but it should be.
...vibrant.
Yeah.
This board just jumps out at you. It's a very busy board, and it is a bit daunting when you first look at it and you see all these places you can go. But as soon as you start to get your head around the iconography, straight away you see, oh, now, yep, and you can see all those options opening up before you.
Yeah. Well, I think once you start playing, you immediately can draw similarities along with Village.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Inca and Marcus have got this down pat now. It's sort of that medium weight worker placement where, yes, it looks daunting at the start, but you break it down and it's actually really simple. You're going to spend a lot of your time making pretty simple choices where it's one of those games where there's not really a choice that is just horrible for you, but there's that really nice decision-making of this is going to be good for me or this is going to be good if I stop someone else from taking it.
But every turn there is a wealth of choices.
Yeah.
And I know the only thing I found myself was like, I wish I had more dice because more dice equals more opportunity to do things.
There are a crapload of dice in here and your little unnecessary cardboard Indian god that holds up to 8 dice for me, never holds 8 dice because the dice are just a hard resource to continually get. There are ways, as you say, Leon, you can place some workers and turn 1 into 2, or you can go and just grab a die if you need it, because it's important not only the pips that are on your die face, but also the colour of it, because you want, in some senses, a couple of really high-value dice of the same colour, so that can allow you to buy the higher-value buildings for your own little private, what do you call it, the Carcassonne area of the game.
Yeah, and that market mechanic where you're trying to get multiple stands of the same type, because that can give you way more resources of that type when you go to the market.
Mm.
But from memory, there's only like 1 or 2 market actions or 1 for each type. So that's a really tight mechanic. I mean, this game has it all.
Yeah, it has it all. And it's one of those things that you look at it and go, well, this is easily expandable. They could chuck another section onto the board here. It would actually fit in with the art of it, and a game that they could go on for years and
years.
When
are you going to be happy with a base game, Leon?
I'm happy with this.
Do we need to talk about this?
I'm happy with this, but I like a game that can be expandable.
I think they could call it Ganja of the Rajis.
Or a better name. And they could do that. But, yeah, no, we played it. And mentioning that little elephant statue, it's very similar to the little alpaca one from Altiplano, except this game isn't rubbish. But we need to mention Bordercon. Have we ever mentioned Bordercon before? I don't think we have on this show.
We did play this at Bordercon.
Yes, we did. Well, you guys did. I played it recently when I bought a copy from one of the insane sales that's going on at the moment, which some people might have picked up on. And, yeah, which, you know, I really, really like it, which I'm, you know, quite happy about.
Yes.
But I had a point, and I've completely forgotten what it is. That's right, at Bordercon. It was the game of Bordercon. This was the game that was on the table the most, apart from Altiplano. It was those two by a country mile. The year before,
it was the Terraforming Mars
Mars year, where that was on at least 5 tables out of the 50 every time. This was on at least 5 tables out of the, you know, the 50 every single day. And I can see why.
Yeah, look, it's beautiful. You look at it, and your initial thought is you're going, bloody hell, there's way too much going on here. And the board is busy. It is. It's a mish of colours and there's so many symbols and it's kind of small in some regards. But once you actually get the little sort of realisation of how the different segments work, it's actually not that complicated. But I dare say you'd need a board gamer to have purchased it and be able to explain it, because this is not something that you just buy off the shelf as a non-gamer I'll play that.
It looks much more intimidating than it actually is, like a lot of these type of games. Whereas there can be the exact opposite with some games. Like I remember, very honestly, at Bordercon, funnily enough, playing Dungeon Pets, a game that I didn't think looked that complicated.
Oh, how wrong you were.
And then I wanted to throw myself out the window about half an hour in going, what? And then 4 hours later, I was what? But I was drunker by that point.
Yeah. Look, this is a worthy successor to the great line of dice worker placement games. So we just recently pulled out Alien Frontiers again and played that after a long time, and reminded me what a great game that is. I don't know whether you guys have played Troyes, which is another Euro dice placement game.
Marco Polo, though.
Yeah, well, there's another one. But this one, for me, I think is right up there. Some really great decisions. You've got lots to do every turn. It looks absolutely amazing. I think I am blown away by it. it's a gorgeous game. And as we said, Inca and Marcus Brand cannot put a foot wrong. I'm really, really interested to see, what is it, Rise of Queensdale, their new Euro legacy game that can be played apparently cooperatively or competitively.
I don't know. I haven't played that, but it sounds like rubbish to me. So anyway,
bingo again.
Raja of the Ganges, if you know anybody in your game group, I'd say definitely get it to the table. If not, it's a worthy purchase. It's one that's staying in my collection, I reckon. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's one of those games. And it must be said, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It is not a long game.
Yeah. No, I think we learnt it and played it three-player in 70 minutes,
yeah,
which is nothing.
No, not at all. There is always great decisions to be made. So anyway, guess it gets at least three or four thumbs up from all of us at the Dice Man. Here we will throw ourselves into a song and then come back with... Oh, there you go. That was a bit of Jiminy Hendrix with Crossed Out Traffic. Yeah, you are with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, very importantly, Mark, have you got something that you want to tell us about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I got my Kickstarter update, baby.
Oh, he slightly danced there, people. Oh, disturbing.
I'm bouncing in the chair.
Just be thankful that you do not have video on this particular
range. Easy, Tiger. You're going to make yourself cough again.
There's a whole lot happening on Kickstarter this week. And let me start off with the Australian Kickstarters. There's a few, probably the most exciting for us here, because we played this game at PAX last year. It's by Good Games Publishing, and the designer is Chris Anthony. It's Guildmaster. Yes. Now, this one's only been out, what, about a day and a half now? I think it's a 23-day campaign.
Yeah, I think it launched our time Tuesday morning, 4 a.m.
Yes,
yeah.
Which I was very annoyed about because I was supposed to be on night shift that night and I thought I'm going to be the first backer in the world on this. But then what did they do the night before? I did my shoulder in again. So I was asleep like a normal person at that time of night instead of being up. But I did back it as soon as I woke up, I promise you.
Well, for those who don't know, Guildmaster is a fantasy tabletop game for 2 to 4 players where players manage an adventure guild, competing with each other to become the most famous guild as an escalating series of events threaten to land. In each of the 9 rounds, players simultaneously and secretly program orders to send teams of adventurers out to recruit more adventurers, attempting increasingly difficult contracts to gain money, fame, and other rewards, while you also hire builders to upgrade your guild and increase your capacity to do everything. Now, Leon, I remember you loved this one, and of course you've backed it already. I think it's
because I won. Remember that, Garth? Remember how I beat you?
I was just about to say, Mark read that out very earnestly.
$67 is this game. It has free shipping. I think it's free shipping most places in the world, or very cheaply subsidised shipping, and that is one of the things that Good Games Publishing do awesomely.
Well, I was about to say that this seems like it's exactly the same price and the exact same conditions as Unfair was only a month or so ago.
Well, I guess they learn, you know, they do learn from their campaigns.
Yeah, well, like I said, it doesn't cost much, and it's free shipping nearly worldwide, as you said, and I don't know if you're going to talk about it or not. Have you got Bargain Quest to talk about?
No.
Well, that's about to end anyway. That's a game that Shut Up and Sit Down review, and
Shut Up and who?
Sit Down. That's what I said.
Sit down, was it?
Anyway, they reviewed that, and that did really well on Kickstarter. And I was going to back it after their review. I was like, that does sound like fun. And then looked at the price, and it was like mid-$100-something for essentially cards. Guildmaster has more than that, and it's half the price.
I, you know what I think they should change the name to?
What?
Not a Bargain Quest.
I see what you did there.
Well, okay, well, speaking of Not a Bargain... For our next Australian game, we're going to a group called Lord of the Stack from Brisbane. Now, this is their first game effort. I don't know anything about them, but they've produced Project, inverted commas, Management, a soul-crushing card game, a cynically satirical game of office politics set in the worst environment of all, a government department. Now, this game is $60.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
$30 shipping.
As one does.
So there you go.
For $90. An Australian-based game.
Yes. Okay. This game has 90 cards, a board that's basically a score track and a couple of spots to put your draw pile and your discard pile, and a score tracker with some paper money.
So it's basically a dollar a card. If it's $60, now, $30 shipping.
Look, this game has only raised not quite $2,500 of its $40,000 with 26 days to go. But look, I don't want to give this game any more oxygen apart from the saying that it, look, it's an Australian Kickstarter. We like to always mention them, but this is a classic example of what good value something like Guildmasters is.
Yes.
Mm. Now, I don't know if you guys remember Luminous Ages.
I do.
Which was a card game that came out, I think it was last year. Anthony Christo from Adelaide was the artist and the designer, and the main thing I remember about this game was the art was absolutely gorgeous. It was sort of a bit of a typical dueling card game, but the art, with lots of dragons and stuff like that, was absolutely amazing. Well, this Dragon Dreams, a Luminous Ages game, is an expansion, but also can be played standalone by Anthony again. Now, it's only got 6 days to go, so if you hear this on the podcast, you better get in quick. But it is funded. It's raised over $4,000. They're only after $2,500. And again, the art is stunning in this one. You can also pick up the core game. It's $40, including shipping for the Dragon Dream deck. Or if you want to go for the whole lot, it's $90 for the base game plus the expansion.
It's a Kali statue in Raja. Yeah, there Raja you go. Again, she's the one with all the arms and stuff.
That's Wait, right. Now,
anywho, sorry, I just noticed it on the rules.
No, you're okay. So,
hear that, Garth? I'm okay.
There you go. You should get a tattoo good. Of that.
Now, Phil.
Bit harsh.
Phil Raff from Brisbane. He's got a game called Falling Koalas. Battle to be the last koala alive in this hilarious game is what he's pitching, but I'm not so sure because it's another cute, fluffy animal game where bad things happen. And, of course, there's an adults-only edition, which, because koalas, you know, they like to play at night, this one's called the Nocturnal Edition. Look, it's only $23, including shipping. It's still got a little way to go. It's bit over 8,000, and it's going for 12.5 or so. But I have to admit, look, it's got some okay art, but it's very much
it's in the exploding
in the
kittens.
Vein of exploding kittens and unstable unicorns and all those sort of games. Unfortunately, and look, you know, if people think they're good at drawing koalas, I guess that's what they do. But hey, it's an Australian Kickstarter, and we like to support Australians.
I don't think they should have an After Dark edition of this game, considering the disease that koalas have.
But don't they also sleep for about 22 out of the 24 hours a day?
Yeah, and they have fingerprints like humans, which so they can be confused at the scene of a crime.
What?
Yeah, so sometimes they could go, oh, we've got the fingerprints. It could be koalas.
Okay. Well, Leon, here is one for you, Leon.
Hello.
You can level up your tabletop with the Ultimate Role-Playing Collection from Arcania Adventures in Brisbane.
Huh.
Now, these guys have raised over $40,000. Their target was only 28, and it still has 19 days to go, so plenty of time to get on board. Now, what this is a whole bunch of stuff to bling up your role-playing session. So you've got a chest, and if you open the chest, it's got a dice tray inside. You can also store your dice. You can get metal dice, you can get plastic dice, you can get metal coins.
Ooh.
You can get these lovely little folios which have a D&D 5th edition character sheet, the first three or four pages, and then a whole bunch of other pages where you can do notes and drawing and maps and everything like that. And it's one of these things where you can start with just the little chest. Yep. I think that's about $39. Or you can go right up and add every single little bit. Now, I got really excited when I saw this.
I was about to say, based on that picture, I was like, that's really cool. I might look into it. I bet you're going to tell me what it costs in a minute, aren't you?
Or if you go, I think if you go for the whole lot, you are looking at $241. Now, mind you, that does get you two sets of beautifully crafted metal dice in a metal box, two coin purses with 140 metal coins.
That's a bit better.
20 gems, five of the D&D journals, plus the chest. Now, I was thinking about just getting this chest because I've been looking for...
Ironically, the chest is the one thing out of there I don't really want. I like the idea of the coins and the gems, though.
Well, the chest, I was interested because I've been looking for a dice tray. I finally realised, sick of rolling dice on the table and having them go everywhere, I want a little sort of felt-lined dice tray. When I look closely at this, though, those little chests, they do remind me of the $5 jewelry boxes that you get from your $1 stores. So I'm not, but look, it could be really good value. It's definitely worth checking out with all that stuff because you can mix and match.
I mean, it has funded, so it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Theoretically, it's going to happen.
Check out Arcania Adventures with their ultimate role-playing collection. Now, finally, before we leave the shores of Australia, this week there's not one, but two playing card Kickstarters. Now,
oh, good.
I have ranted about this in the past. So you've got one company called Joker and the Thief. They've raised over $50,000. Their cards are made by the US playing card company in America. Uh-huh. They're shipped free in America, of course, but if you want to buy them in Australia, you pay $10 shipping.
Okay.
For a deck of cards.
Okay.
Now, the company's based in Cairns, but did I mention the cards are made in America? Clearly, this Kickstarter is targeted at Americans. Mm-hmm. So it's $14 Australian for a deck of cards, plus $10 shipping if we want to buy it. So that's one deck of cards, $24.
Right.
Now, the second company is called Kalevala, which is based in Melbourne. They've also raised over $23,000 for a deck of cards. Now, theirs is based on the 19th century epic poem of Finland called Kalevala. It's got a lot more custom art in that one because it's all about the characters that are in that epic poem. Whereas the Joker and the Thief is very much your very traditional card with some fancy little art on the A for the ace. And instead of two jokers, they've got, guess it, a joker
and a thief.
That's the one.
Does it come with a soundtrack by whoever that Australian band was?
Wolfmother.
Wolfmother, that's the one.
Anyway, did I mention that the second card game is also made by the US playing card company, and it's also free shipping in the US, but this one costs $6 to get to Australia. But because it's got more art, their deck of card cost $20.
Okay.
So I jumped on the website of the US playing card company because I thought, how much is a deck of cards worth? And there's sort of a custom art Coca-Cola deck of cards. They cost $4.
Mm-hmm. Right. With free shipping to the US?
No, a couple of dollars of shipping as well. But here's the thing.
Or you could go down to your supermarket right now and get two decks of cards for $2.
What? Leon.
Yes.
You're a young person.
I am one of the... We keep saying that. I'm 31 years old.
What are the young people doing with decks of cards these days that they need $20 and $30 decks of cards? Is it you can't go on that Penn and Teller show where you have to fool them unless you've got a $30 deck of cards?
I think you'll find
it's
the new Tinder.
Yeah, when you're not playing Fortnite with Drake and Nicki Minaj, okay. And yep, they're the most young people things I know at the moment.
Oh my goodness!
You need to be playing, yeah, cards.
I reckon the Kardashians probably Instagrammed it.
Look, between the two of them, as I said, they have raised something like $75,000. For these packs of cards for playing card games or magic tricks or whatever, I just don't get it.
Clearly.
No, I must admit, years ago, I bought one of these special decks of cards off Kickstarter. They were black plastic and had like cool reapers and stuff on them. And they were kind of cool, but I've got them. I haven't actually used them yet because I've looked at them and kind of gone, if I want to play like a game of Hold'em or something like that, I don't want to be fiddling around with having people have to look at it twice to go, oh, what is this again? I can't really tell because it's not the cards I'm used to.
When you're playing those pokery type games, aren't you like flicking up the corners, or is that only on TV when they do that?
No, you do that in the real as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think the last deck of cards I bought is when there was the whole oil wars going on. I got the US military one that was Saddam Hussein was the ace of spades.
Saddam and his sons.
Yeah, that's probably the last deck of cards I bought.
Anyway, who can work out what the young people are doing these days? But clearly they're doing cards.
Not us.
Maybe they're...
they're doing cards.
Using those cards to...
they're chopping the cards up.
Cut up their lines of coke and snort off.
Putting them in their ears. Who knows?
Do people still do coke these days?
What are you looking at me for? I don't know.
Okay.
Why do you know someone?
Moving on out of Australia, leaving those cards behind, for the love of board games, Leon.
That's what we're here for, apparently.
It is a book about our hobby, and it's full of chapters of many, many leading designers, including our own Phil Walker Harding.
That's true.
And our own adopted now, Martin Wallace, as well as almost every big name in our hobby. It's got some really lovely illustrations, this one. They've got, you know, Rainer Canizia looking like a Sumerian prince and Bruno Cathala with a pot on his head or, you know, I think it's meant to be a turban or something. But the art is really, really clever. I'm really interested in this one, and I did want to back it. In fact, as soon as I read it, I was like, yep, I'm going to get that.
For sure.
It's only available in PDF or soft cover. The soft cover is $25 US, and then $14 US shipping, which means I think it worked out to be about $53 Australian for a soft cover book. Now, I think it's going to be a hefty book because there's a lot of chapters, but I don't really like to read PDFs, and I could get the PDF for $10. I would love it to be a really nice hardcover.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of those ones that you want to put on your gaming shelf. Yeah,
and then maybe, you know, you would be willing to pay $50 for a lovely hardcover. But
like all those D&D books that I buy.
Oh, yeah.
They're all lovely hardcovers.
And look, this one was funded in 4 hours. Mm. Now, they're only going for $8,000 Australian.
Yep.
It's almost 26,000, so it's definitely funded. If you're interested in reading what these designers have got to say, I think this is definitely well worth checking out.
Is there a little sneak peek chapter or something that you can read?
Kickstarter page there is. You can download a free chapter about Richard Garfield.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you look at that list of designers, just to quote some of the ones I haven't mentioned, Matt Leacock, Anton Bowser, Seiji Kanai, a love letter, Jonathan Gilmore, Dead of Winter, and other bad games we've mentioned recently. Wolfgang Kramer, Jamie Stegmaier, Dominic Crapuchet, Ted Olsbach, Bruno Fattuti, Jason Matthews, the list goes on.
It's pretty much the cream of the crop.
Yeah, yeah, and so I think this book is going to have, looks like, about 30 chapters.
Inga and Marcus in there?
Didn't see them. Probably not. No. But if you're interested in reading about board games, particularly about designers and their thought processes, if you've had some, you know, been really interested in those interviews that I've done, those awesome interviews, and you'd like to hear more from designers, this book is definitely worth checking out. It's just a little bit pricey for us here down under.
Mm.
Queen Games. Now, I know we bagged them out a bit in their use of Kickstarter.
How much is the shipping, Mark? How much is the shipping?
So just by saying this, it's costing us $10 in your shipping, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. That's right. So what they're doing is they are actually releasing all their Essen releases. So they've got 3 Essen releases coming. Mm. They've got Bastille, Skyland, and Franchise. And then they've got some exclusive expansion content, which they're calling Queenies. Now, I'm trying to bring this up on the computer, but it just doesn't want to work.
Well, it's because you're not typing in the right spot.
That's right.
Yeah, you probably want to search.
We told you about you multitasking.
You probably want to search in the search bar.
So Kickstarter
or prepare your break in
Games, Bastille. Well, I'm having to do everything here. Here we go. So it's their 3 Essen releases.
Yep.
I said, they've raised almost $100,000. So basically, you don't have to go to Essen to get these games. You can get them here. And
although it'd probably be cheaper.
But one of the things is all these exclusive, they're calling them Queenies, these sort of mini expansions. If you want everything, you're paying €135 plus €30 shipping. So, it's only $264 Australian, Leon. What are you talking about?
For 3 games.
Well,
what a bargain.
To be fair, the shipping is somewhat reasonable
based off
the amount of the games. So that I'll give it to you. However, I'm not going to back it for all that money. But they do look all right. Might even say interesting. But, yeah, I don't know.
Queen Games should be able to do a lot better with shipping full stop. I'm not interested in that at all, but they use it as a pre-order system. It's incredibly successful for them. They've got their business model. Boom.
I know I'm going to lose every somewhat small ounce of credibility that I actually have. I'm trying to think if I've ever played a Queen game.
Ooh.
Oh, surely.
I'm just trying to think of what would I have played.
Alhambra. That's one.
Okay.
Of
yeah. Okay. I've played that a few times. Yeah.
So we played World Monuments. That was Queen Games.
Yeah, there's Escape Curse of the Temple, the dice rolling one, and the zombie version. Look, there's lots of them.
I just don't see them as Queen Games. I see Queen Games as a specific kind of art style on their cover and all those type of games for some reason I can't think of. Mainly because I've never seen them in the flesh because nobody in Australia buys them.
Couple more quick ones. So Pax Pamir, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that one. There's a second edition. It's by Cole Werler, who you may not have heard of, but he's actually the designer of Root.
Yes.
Now, Pax Pamir came out, I think, about 4 or 5 years ago. It's actually a little bit like a coin game. You're playing Afghanistan in the late 18th, early 19th century, where you're sort of one of the moguls there who's trying to pull together, at the end of the Durrani Empire, you're trying to pull together to be the most powerful sort of tribe leader in Afghanistan, and you've got the British coming in, you've got the Russians coming in. It's on a beautiful cloth map. It's said it has a bit of a coiny feel, although it's not, definitely not a coin game. It's $100 including shipping. It's not going to be released to retail. It's got 21 days to go.
I'm actually very tempted in this. I had a look at this and I've stuck the old remind me about it button on Kickstarter, because I do remember hearing about this game a while back, and I do remember that he was the designer of Root, and that's been getting a lot of positive press lately with the Kickstarter being delivered.
Definitely worth having a look. That's PAX Premier Second Edition. It's already 1,000% funded. And then there is, for you, Leon, the young kids, Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid.
Which has been relevant for so many years now.
Yeah. Now, it's by Renegade. These guys can't put a foot wrong. Mm. Obviously, it's got minis, it's got cards, it's got a huge number of expansions and add-ons. So you're looking at $75 for the base game. Interestingly, they've got two levels. They've got the base game and no stretch goals for $75. And then they've got the base game and all the stretch goals for $90.
Now, so, in other words, they've got a pledge for $90.
Yeah. Or you can go all in for $240, get the base game, three expansions, heaps of extra add-ons, plus a 200-millimetre tall Megazord, which I didn't even know what that was, but it's when all the Power Rangers join together into the big dude.
No, when Mark, for God's sake, when they all get into their machines, their dinosaur robot type things, and when that merges into one big thing, it's the Megazord.
It's Voltron.
Basically, yes. And as we mentioned before at the pub, you said, it's like a 20-centimetre mini. That's crazy. And to which I said, is he holding his sword in the air, Mark?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
To which he is. So, in other words, it's a 8-centimetre tall mini with a big sword sticking out the top.
No, not quite. Look, there's also heaps of add-ons that you can add on. This is a cash sink for sure. Look, the funny thing is, in the video, it's got lots of pictures, no information about the gameplay at all. So I don't know what the gameplay is like, but
sure, it'll probably be horrible. Look, but the minis alone, and I've looked at this, and I was a kid during the Power Rangers craze, and I did watch it religiously back then. It does have every single thing that somebody that watched this show in the 90s would possibly want. It has got all of them.
Look, it's already raised over $500,000. It's going to go berserk. It's got seven more days to go if you want to get on it. So that is Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. Two more quick ones. A Thieves' Fortune by Artipia Games, which is a Greek company. The design team of Konstantinos Kokinis and Sotirios Santilas. They are the team behind Project Elite and New Dawn. It's a mix of card drafting and engine building, where all players represent a future timeline of the same thief, which is a really interesting little twist and an intriguing concept for me. It's got gorgeous art, although it doesn't credit one particular artist. It actually only credits two game art outsourcing studios. So clearly there's probably 50 different artists that have done the art, but it does look really beautiful. It's only 20% funded, I think, but it's still got 21 days to go. Looks really nice. So that's a Thieves' Fortune. And finally, Starcadia Quest by Cool Mini or Not. Now, when I looked at this, I was scratching my head going, this game sounds really familiar. You know, and it's got the chibi minis in a sci-fi theme, lots of lovely cards, lots of lovely boards, and I'm still scratching my head going,
I mean, I feel a random ageist comment coming on.
Why do I know this game? And then, of course, I realised Starcadia Quest. Oh, it's Arcadia Quest in space. Yeah. Apparently, it's a bit more than that. Mm. Again, they've raised over $500,000. It's still got 12 days to go. And again, you can add on so much extra stuff. Everyone knows these games make a lot of money. And
I have heard good things about Arcadia Quest, and it always has been one that I've been interested to play. However, I've never actually seen it get to the table anywhere, although I'm sure I probably know somebody that does have it.
Yep.
And the version, the sci-fi version, it's actually relatively reasonable priced for one of these crazy mini-fest type games in your mid-100s or so, so it might be worth, it'd be a good place to get into these kind of games, because the other ones have been coming out for years with expansions coming out their ears.
And again, once the minis are painted, they'll look amazing.
It's super cute. If you're into this sort of stuff, you would love it. That's all I've got for Kickstarter this week.
Is that all?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, we better throw to a song, and then we'll come back and wrap up with some more games awards that are coming out in the not-too-distant future. But anyway, we are the Dice Men Cometh. It's Ed Radio 99.3 FM, and here is your song.
Hello everyone, Mark here with a brief history lesson about patronage. Did you know that Cesare Borgia patronised Leonardo da Vinci? We all know where that ended up. That game he made about civilization building got bastardised into Small World, a game of cuddly races cuddling up against each other in cuddly mountain caves. And Chrétien de Troyes, or Troyes as you might know him, was patronised by Marie of France. Now, I used to call her French Mary when I knew her back in the 12th century. But again, another board game that was produced with patronage. How can you support patronage these days? Well, we've got this web-based thingy on the internet called Patreon. And by giving money to the Dice Men there, you allow us to create board gaming genius by way of media content, by way of your internet radio waves into your ears. And there's more. But we need more money to do it. If you support us on Patreon, you'll get paid back 1,000 times over in the content that we create. Or just feel good that you're helping 3 poor little people in Tasmania from having a hobby. We appreciate everything you do. We love you all. Thank you so much for supporting the Dice Men on Patreon. Getting paid back does not include real money. Terms and conditions apply.
That was Franz Ferdinand with Evil and the Heathen here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. This week, as all weeks, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. I was in there just the other day and I picked up a few comical books because I like to read the comical books. Have I mentioned it before? And they also sell lots of other stuff and the staff's all friendly. And yeah, just go in there and give them all your money for the love of God. And tell them that the Dice Men sent you.
Yes.
They always like to hear that and so do we.
We do.
Yeah. So, Garth.
Yes.
Everyone out there thinks they're bloody good enough to give out board game awards these days. Where do they get off? Where's the goal?
Well, the latest upstart to contribute to board gaming is the International Gamers Awards that had the nerve to start in 1999.
Oh, listen. Honestly, they had the nerve to start 19 years ago, and now they think they're all that.
Yes. So, they are primarily aimed towards the more heavy games, which is great considering that the spiel particularly is going towards the lighter games and things that may have been Kenner-worthy a few years ago are now just too heavy to even be nominated. So this is made up of a jury of around about 27 members from all over the world. Friend of the show and friend of ours, Melissa, is part of the jury on this one. Ah. So it's great to have that Australian connection, which is wonderful. But what they've got is a current list of 10 nominees for their Game of the Year. And then they also have about half a dozen games of two-player Game of the Year. And I just thought it'd be a little quick one. We've only got a couple of minutes left. So these games potentially would be nominated for other awards like your spiel, but they also might be a little bit too heavy from the other one. But it's a really interesting mix of games.
Yeah.
So in alphabetical order, purely because that's how they list them, the nominees for the Game of the Year, the International Game of the Year, Agra by Michael Keller and was it Quind Games? I think it was. So that's about resource production in India. Then you've got Altiplano.
Yeah.
You know.
Llamas.
Exactly.
Alpacas.
In the Andes. We've got Azul.
Of course.
So, you know, being a tiler in Portugal or wherever you want to
tile. Yes.
Then you've got Clans of Caledonia, which is about farming in the Scottish Highlands. Mark, have you got any accent to say about that?
Och, no, I haven't.
Was that Irish?
I don't know.
Now, we did play that at a particular gaming convention located on the border between two states. We haven't really talked about it as a what we've been playing, but it's a damn fine game.
Yeah, I think we may do that soon.
We've then got Decrypto, which is that party game, two teams against each other, play it after a few drinks with the right group of people, and it would be a lot of fun.
It's also the lightest of these tens by a country mile.
I know. I was really surprised it was in there. You've then got, from Decrypto, to the Gaia Project, yes, which slightly is the re-implementation of Terra Mystica, a little bit more complex. You've then got Gentes.
I don't know what that is.
Another sort of civilization-style game.
A
so,
tree on a box.
Exactly right.
That's a Latin word for greater groups of human beings, yeah, did you know?
Civilization-building game, yes, I did. You then got Heaven and Alemark, which you've played, which is the game about producing beer, but you're not actually producing beer, yes, and you don't produce beer in this game. Yep.
And not only you, but I believe also the Dice Tower did a review of that and said utter rubbish as well.
Yes!
So
I mean... It's okay.
You've then got Newsford, Uwe Rosenberg, which is about being a owner of a Newsford fish farm in the Lofoten Islands on the coast of Norway?
Scandinavia
up there where they Scandinavian.
The big fjord.
We should
fjord top lands.
Yep. You've then got Pulsar 2849, Space Exploration. You have Raja of the Ganges, Leon, which you just talked about. Then Santa Maria, some dice manipulation game there. And then Transatlantic, where you're all rival shipping companies trying to take stuff all over the world. Mm. So there is definitely primarily a much heavier bent to these games. But then you've got lighter stuff like Azul and incredibly like Decrypto thrown in there. So it's a really interesting mix. I'm very keen to see how these awards actually play out.
That's a belting 10. That's a real good 10.
It's a good list of 10. So,
apart from Heaven and Earth.
Then moving on to the two-player games, you've got the 13 Days the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is that two-player card game, claims to give you the Twilight Struggle feeling in 45 minutes. You've got Claim by Scott Arms and, little sort of trick-taking game, not too new, complicated. Codenames Duet by Varda and CGE. Two-player version of Codenames. Colonial Twilight, which is
a two-player coin game.
Two-player coin game, replaying the French-Algerian War. So you've gone from Codenames Duet that plays in about 10 minutes to this four-hour two-player coin game. Yep. You've got Fog of Love, which got a lot of plaudits from a lot of reviewers.
Including us.
The game of being in a relationship, or maybe not. You've then got The Fox in the Forest, again, a really light, quick game. And then Shadows in Kyoto, which is a re-implementation of some other Japanese game.
It's a sequel to Hanamakoji.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well done. So they're the list of games, and I just thought that should get a little bit of recognition because it's been going around since 1999, which is, God, Mark, you're only in your 40s then. So that was good. And the list of games is a list of games that I, as a gamer who traditionally plays heavier games, really appreciates. Yep. And there's a lot of games there that I don't think I've been getting enough love out there. So that's my little spiel on those.
Yes.
And that's kind of where we draw the line in the sand for this particular show.
I think we've got through quite a lot tonight and we've still got about at least 20 or 30 seconds before we have to rush out the door.
So in that case, what we say is follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. We have our own website, dicemencometh.com.
We're
clearly active on the Facebooks. If you are really, really interested and want to buy some of our stuff, jump onto Redbubble.
Yeah.
We have our own loot there and you can wear a hoodie or a T-shirt or get something else that is really, really classy.
Some quality moich.
Actually, look, what I want to do, I want to do a call out to our friend Justin from Shepicon, because what he's going to do is he's going to make me one of those fantastic dice rolling trays that he makes and then send it down here, and I'm going to talk about how awesome it is.
Oh.
I might even send him some money if he lets me know how much they are.
All right, Justin, hope you're listening. So that has been episode 226.
Yes.
I've been Mark, he's been Leon, he's been
Garth.
Mark and Garth. And on that note, we better call it quits. We've got to go and play a classic of ourselves, actually. We're playing Seven Wonders tonight, lads.
Yeah.
So we're out of here. It's a Dice Man Cometh. Go buy stuff from Area 52, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Ta-da.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Man Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.